Hello and welcome to the Advocacy Iceberg podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 14 of the podcast. In this episode I'm talking to Madeline Church, who works for Safer World and has played a leading role there in developing and managing the evolving approach to evaluating their work. And we talk about that, and she has a long and distinguished history of thinking about and doing advocacy-related evaluation. For reasons that I should understand but don't totally, the audio on the recording didn't turn out great in that the volume on my questions was very low, so I tinkered with the sound a bit and hope it's okay. You can definitely hear the answers, which are the important part anyway. Okay, here we go.
Well, I'm Madeline Church. I'm the head of the Organisational Development Unit at Safer World. And Safer World's an organisation that works on conflict prevention and peace building around the world. I guess we have about 20 countries at the minute that we work in or on. And we do everything from programming on the ground to high-level policy advocacy and advocacy policy stuff at the national or state lower level state level in the places where we work.
Okay, cool. And so we're mainly talking about this report that you wrote published last year, I think, called Doing Things Differently.
Yeah.
Which was about a short, it's quite short, isn't it? It's a good read. And I'll put a link up to it on the Facebook page, Advocacy Iceberg Facebook page. And it sort of describes how you developed a new way of thinking, or a new way of monitoring, evaluating and learning from your work.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about bits in that, but I don't know if you want to give an overview of...
So when I joined Safer World, there was no system, really, other than activity reporting for what we did. It didn't mean to say that people weren't thinking about the changes we were bringing about, but there was no system. And it's always been my contention that you have to get the people who are doing the work to monitor and evaluate as they go along. Because otherwise you're dealing with a sort of evidence-free world that means that somebody who comes in after the fact has to somehow rebuild a whole storyline and find primary evidence. And as someone who'd been an evaluator for a long time, for the precisely advocacy policy type stuff, I was very aware of the whole idea of, you know, oh, there's no evidence, it's a black box, nobody knows what the changes are, it's impossible to prove, a whole series of things like that. And so I've always been interested in, yeah, people taking charge of that whole exercise and working out what constitutes evidence of the claims that they're making about the changes they make in their work. So I set about trying to find a system and put something in place that was both straightforward and could handle the complexity of the places that we work in. And I guess there are two principles there. One is that I fully believe that an over-elaborate framework or instrument for doing that in a rapidly changing context is a big waste of time. What you need is something really straightforward that can kind of handle the complexity of what's around you, but gives you a structure in which you can consider and talk about and analyse what you're seeing. And so this thing that we set up, which we call outcome monitoring, was taken from the work that Ricardo Wilson-Grau and others have done on outcome harvesting and is linked to outcome mapping as a process, but was looking at using something really, really straightforward about trying to document and understand what others are doing differently rather than what we're doing. And that's really the basis of it. So it's an idea of taking our mind off ourselves, what we're doing, and looking at what others are doing differently as a result of that. And it was also designed to try and cope with, we have, I don't know, everybody in our organisation has English largely as a second language. And the language of log frames and monitoring and evaluation is often very unnecessarily complicated for me and for others. So we wanted to get rid of some of that terminology and just try and get to the heart of what really matters.
Yes, and that sounded like sort of almost a starting point for you, that idea of sort of stripping away the jargon. You came up with a very sort of simple way of defining outcomes, for example, and then sort of started from there.
Yeah. And in fact, it was a real aha moment. I mean, it was for me. It was one of those moments when talking to a colleague who's Nepalese, and he has sadly passed away, but he said, when I talk to people in the field, I say, an outcome is other people doing things differently. And I just thought, oh, God, that is so simple and so useful that I just pinched it immediately. And that was the sort of starting point. The other thing I totally took was the GPAC Conflict Prevention Network. But I pinched GPAC's kind of system as well a little bit for the outcome process.
Right.
So I created a really basic form and structure that just said, we need to keep a running tab, in a way, of who's doing what differently, where and when,
yeah,
and then try and analyse why that matters,
right,
and what connection it has to anything we're doing. And that's really the basis of it. We do have what we, either electronic or actual physical evidence boxes, where, and the kind of, the general principle is if in doubt, put it in the evidence box. But we have been more systematic than that. So, for instance, with the advocacy policy work, we went through and looked at what kinds of types of evidence we would want to keep. So we have a list of six types of evidence that we try and focus on in terms of collecting as we go along. And then we have 6 monthly periods where we review what we are claiming are outcomes, i.e. what others are doing differently, and why they matter, what's significant about them. Because in one context, somebody doing something differently at a particular point in time might be incredibly significant, and in another context, that might be utterly meaningless. And the key is in the connection between the two. So actually dealing with and keeping a record of what those changes are and then making the analysis of why it matters is the absolute centre of it. Because if you just make lists, it's no good at all, because you've got no analysis to back it up. Part of the drive for it was this, if you know, working in what, in the environments and the on the issues that Safer World works on, we try and take a kind of systemic look at the conflict dynamics that are going on in the environment that we're in. And those are quite complicated. And so one of the things that always frustrates me about evaluation as a, what do you call it, a slightly reductionist exercise. I mean, I think part of the problem there is that you erase the complexities and you also take no account of the analysis of those complexities and how they change over time. And it's very difficult to do that if you're not actually in it. So one of the aspects of this is trying to improve our own analysis as well of what's going on in the territory that we're in, at the same time as seeing what's changing.
Yes.
And so it's a monitoring exercise that is much more important than simply going, well, we did X number of activities, or we produced X number of reports, and we did it well, and we did it, you know, in an efficient manner, and we didn't spend too much money. Those things are relatively straightforward. The rest of it is what I can only describe as a bit of an art form. And you need to learn how to do that yourself repeatedly and often. And you have to know how to kind of process that if you're trying to make sense of the changes in relation to the context. And that, if you don't do it regularly, like every 6 months, you miss it. the moment's gone. You can't really make adjustments, and you can't. So it was also part of an exercise to be able to say, well, the team needs to make some changes with what we're doing based on what we're seeing. And so this is just a format for allowing us to do that.
Yes, and it's, I mean, the sort of key to that, all that is it's a very sort of devolved approach, isn't it?
Yes.
You're talking about people on the ground making sense of what's going on, and, you know, I think you talk about sort of evaluation as advocacy, so in a, I guess you mean by that, that, you know, that process of learning feeds into the ongoing work in a sort of clear and obvious way. That's a bit different, isn't it? It's a lot of the systems that get set up, they're about sort of reporting upwards and sort of sense being made of things in the centre, and people getting these reports, and then actually doesn't give them the picture they want, and it becomes very overblown and time consuming. I think you talk about, you know, basically talking to people rather than getting people to write stuff down, for example. So do you want to say a bit more about that kind of thing?
Well, I think it slightly depends where we are, but if we take a couple of examples, one would be the programme of work we do in South Sudan, where we have people based in offices in 8 states in South Sudan, and they are all local South Sudanese. And they all speak English, but they all speak English as a second language. And they are working with partners in those environments, and the partners are working with the communities that we're working with. And those communities are often the most affected by conflict and disenfranchisement and neglect and all sorts of aspects. So those people are the ones who have access to and knowledge of the environment in which they're in, the environment in which they're working. And if you sit and talk to them about what's going on in that territory, you get a mine of an incredible kind of insight and information. If you expect that to translate into a written document, you're often dealing with something that's incredibly simplistic. And that's partly to do with it's a written form rather than an oral form. You can't ask questions, etc., etc. There's a whole range of things. So we decided to collect information in the simplest possible way at the very finger ends, I like to call it, of the work and the organisation. And that means keeping what sometimes are only oral records and then writing them down afterwards of the kinds of changes that we're talking about, what's happened, what's gone, what's changed in this community between the relationships between the police and the community, for instance. You know, X commander has changed the way he's behaving. Make a note, some form of reference. And then every 6 months, the Safer World staff member will sit with the partner and try and write some of that down together in a conversation. And that will then be something that the monitoring and evaluation and learning coordinator, who is sitting in this sort of central office in Juba, will have conversations on the telephone about. They'll bring all that twice a year to a big meeting in Juba. So once a year, the staff will all gather, and the other once a year, if you see what I mean, that will include all the partners. And in those moments, we bring people from the other programs in the area, if we can. So we might bring somebody from the Kenya program or the Somalia program, but equally somebody from the Bangladesh program or the Myanmar program to participate in that exercise. So that would be something that I might facilitate, and we would spend 3 days looking at all the meaningful stuff that's come out of all 8 states across South Sudan, which means we'll have 50 people in a room. And we'll have 7 or 8 working groups, and people will be looking at the content of that material and saying, is this an outcome? How would we frame it? What's it telling us about the work? Are there indications of sustainability in here? Could we build on it? And it's a structured process. It isn't just random. You know, it's a structured process. It goes through a very sort of specific set of tasks, as it were, and working group content. But the important thing is that it's both a document and a discussion. And after that, we will have a kind of big meeting room, and all the walls will be covered with flip chart papers that are all structured in the same way, all highlighted for different things. And all of that will then get written up by the Monitoring and Evaluation and Learning Coordinator and put onto our online system. So then you'll get, as a result of that meeting, you might have 25 outcomes, 50 outcomes, some of which are very tiny and are sort of shoots of change, and some of which are pretty substantial. And we will then decide which ones of those might go into a newsletter or a report to a donor or on the website or into a case study or something like that. And there are others, things that are showing promising signs but aren't really counting, and we put them sort of in a outcome watch pile for people to think about how they might make more of that, how they might improve the work that they're doing to really invest more in this or develop the potential of that, or etc., etc. And that's South Sudan. And South Sudan has been doing that for the last 4 years, I'd say. We've got a new, brand new program in Myanmar, and we've just done the first training for the new staff partners, and we now have a policy advocacy kind of coordinator person as well in that program, and they've decided that they're going to dedicate time to doing that on a regular basis so that everybody gets to practice the process and understand how it works, and then they're going to move to a twice a year process just like the rest of the organization does. And one of the reasons why I wrote that paper last year was that I wrote it after 5 years of trying to invest the organisation with this new process, because I am, if I'm honest, I see a lot of people writing stuff about monitoring and evaluation systems that they haven't actually tried out. You get money to write a manual, you get money to write a system, you do it all, you put it out there. But actually I wanted myself to be able to say, after 5 years of work, this is what we've managed to achieve. And so it was definitely something that gathered in evidence of change inside the organisation over a period of 5 years, really. And that's what I wanted that paper to be able to offer to people.
Yes. And you stress in the paper, don't you, this sort of the way you embed this process is by, as you've been saying, sort of through practice rather than you can't expect to sort of train people to. And that the key thing is it that, you know, that sort of reorientation, I guess, away from thinking in activities to thinking your starting point being change, is that,
yeah.
Is that the, and that takes time?
Yes. I mean, most people who are working in the places where it matters, in a sense, are often very taken up with having to just do activities. And they don't get a lot of chance or a lot of space to reflect on what's really changing. They've got an implementation plan, a work plan. They're busy doing stuff, and giving them an opportunity to take a step back and really just think about where that's taking them in a structured way is something that they pretty much across the board would tell them, I think, if you ask them now, they've never had the opportunity to do properly in any other place where they've worked. They've had to fill in a lot of forms or add up a lot of stuff. But actually sitting and reflecting in a structured way around real change has been something that they both have missed, really, in a lot of the other places they've worked in, and also they really value. I mean, this wouldn't work if people didn't like it. People find it useful.
And presumably, I mean, the sort of session you're talking about, Juba, that kind of feeds into the planning, or it is the planning.
Yeah. I mean, it's followed immediately by a couple of days of planning, where they'll sit there and go, okay, well, do we need to change that activity then? Because that's not making any sense, that one. If we do more of this and less of that, then we might just, you know, find that this has a greater chance of success. So yes, that is exactly the point. It does adapt what people are doing.
You say, I think in the report, about, you know, that this approach fits or aligns with your organisational stress on sort of conflict and gender sensitivity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also quite... I mean, it's challenging for people to think about how to engage with conflict dynamics at a broad system level in any country. That's very, very challenging. But locally, one of the things that when you try and look at what people present as outcomes and you say, okay, this is a really good outcome for some people, but is it a really bad outcome for other people? And that is often the case in the work that goes on in any conflict environment, because you're either shifting conflict dynamics from one place to another, or you're focusing on one set of people if you're not careful, and other people will have perverse knock-on effects from that. And unless you actually make space for that conversation to occur and really challenge some of the thinking that potentially is making that happen, you can easily find yourself rather self-congratulatory place where you've missed some of the really important aspects of that system. So I don't think we've got anywhere near the objectives that we set ourselves, which are about transformation. But it gives us an opportunity to, in a way, put our work to scrutiny and ask ourselves hard questions about those things. And it's really important that we do. So an outcome that's a really positive one for the young men in a village might be really bad for the young women. And that gives you an entry point to try and alter some of the thinking. But it doesn't necessarily make a grand change. These things are slow burns in many ways.
There's a sort of view in the sector, or there's a strand of opinion, I think, in the sector that can sort of blame funders for having these requirements that lead to quite formalised processes, you know, reporting against milestones and indicators, all this sort of stuff, and so that M&E systems are often sort of set up in order to fulfil those requirements. So I'm interested that you obviously have those sort of requirements. I mean, you talk a bit about that in the report, you know, that you have these various log frames that you're expected to complete. So I'm just interested how you sort of marry those two things, and how easy that is to do, or how you do it.
I mean, I think there's a few things to say. We would never have done this exercise if we hadn't been challenged by a donor to put a proper system in place. I mean, that is absolutely true. And we had a strategic grant for the organisation which allowed us to employ me and a couple of other people, which meant that we could institute something that we thought was a system that would work. So that's that level of challenge was extremely useful and enabled the organisation to take it on and say, this is a requirement, actually, we need to do this, so we can't have any, this is not up for negotiation. The way it looks might be, but the fact that we have to do it is not. This is step one. Secondly, so you can create a log frame that is a structure that serves a particular funder or donor, which is a representation of your work. It describes your work, it describes the theory behind it, it suggests what kind of evidence you might look for change. But it's not an implementation plan in that sense, and it never will be, because it's supposed to be something that reflects rather than guides or constricts your work. And what we do with this is we generate enough data and information to be able to write substantially better donor reports than we ever have been able to do in the past, with substantially more evidence to back up the claims we're making about the differences. And for instance, we did an evaluation recently of all our policy advocacy work on the 2030 agenda, the SDGs. So we took five years ago, we started pushing around the Goal 16 agenda for the SDGs.
Which is one?
Peaceful and inclusive societies. And we inserted ourselves as an organisation into every space that we could possibly get into in order to try and influence that agenda. And during that process, we kept an exceptionally detailed set of records about all the changes that we had influenced over that time. And we kept all of that in our electronic evidence box. And then we commissioned an evaluation of that from an external person last year. And we presented her with a substantial data set of claims and evidence to back it up. That meant she had to do very little primary evidence gathering. She just had to test an enormous amount of... She picked the claims that she would test out of all of the stuff that we presented her with. And in that way, for me, it was also... It was really gratifying because I've spent the last, 5 years sitting in rooms of people going, oh, you know, it's too difficult. It's far too difficult to evaluate policy advocacy work. It's much, much too difficult. Oh, we can't do it. We don't know how to do it, etc. And I just disagree with that. I think it's just not true. And so this is, for me, evidence that it's not true. It's actually possible to do this stuff. Yeah. And if you just take a systematic approach to it without boxing it, you can generate lots of material and evidence that can then be used by people to test and verify and check your claims for having had influence in the areas where you say you are having influence.
Yes.
It's not difficult.
No. I think the difficult thing is being clear about what it is you're trying to achieve. The rest is falls out from that.
And I think the things that you're trying to achieve change over time. And if you can make the connection between you've tried this, this is what's happened, you've changed your mind, you've altered your strategy, you've gone this way, you've gone that way as a result of X, Y, and Z, and you can track that, it's a fairly clear theory of change, if you like. And I mean that is the terminology that people like to use at the minute, but at least it's revealing processes that are underlying what this work is all about.
Sure.
And for me, it's not hard. It's just that you need to have a system to do it that connects with what it's really about.
Yeah, but you're saying the hard thing is really the sort of cultural shift.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the cultural shift in the organisation, as I say, has been profound and has been really hard work and requires a lot of investment and belief that this is a worthwhile thing to do.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's really good to hear, interesting to hear. People should read the paper as well.
Yeah, and I may well do... an update or a kind of certainly some more interviews with people.
Right.
We've got a few rather scrappy videos at the moment on our website, and I'm probably going to redo some of those with new people.
Yeah, I think that'd be good because I guess it's a sort of living process in that sense, isn't it? So periodic reflections on it.
Yeah, and we've got some new people who've come in and are interested in other aspects of it, and I've had, there's been a few more developments. I think it's about 18 months since I actually put all that down on paper, and I could probably, do a refresh of some of that stuff as well.
Cool. Look forward to seeing that. So thank you very much for your time.
Not at all.
For your insights.
Yeah.
Thank you.